You're tuned in for another deep dive, and this time we're plunging into the recent happenings around Palmer Lake, Monument, and the entire Tri-Lakes region.
Yeah, we've sifted through a fresh batch of local news, specifically from 2504, to bring you up to speed.
We'll cover everything from, you know, local government decisions, school district updates, water issues, community development. Quite a bit, actually.
Exactly. Think of it as your briefing. We've pulled the key developments from board meetings, workshops, community events, all that stuff.
Our mission really is to extract the most interesting bits, save you some time, but keep you totally informed.
Right. We've got info from local articles, meeting minutes, the works. So you get a concise but hopefully thorough understanding of what's going on.
Okay, let's jump right in. Starting up in Palmer Lake, the whole Bucky's Travel Center thing sounds like there's been a development. Or maybe a lack of one.
Well, yeah, it's taken an interesting turn. You remember the initial annexation petition for that big Bucky's?
Oh, yeah. And the lawsuit from Integrity Matters?
That's the one. Well, at the March 13th board meeting, the town attorney announced something pretty significant.
Okay. What was it?
The annexation request for Bucky's. It's been withdrawn.
Withdrawn? Really?
Yeah, but not just that, but the resolution that said the land was even eligible for annexation. Hmm. That's null now, too.
Wow. Okay. That's decisive. Did they say why?
The report we saw didn't get into the specifics from the attorney, but, you know, there's been some chatter elsewhere suggesting maybe they'll resubmit it later.
Hmm. So maybe not completely off the table then. Still possibly in the cards.
Could be. It's not totally clear, but for now, it's withdrawn.
And what about those studies they were doing? Traffic? Fiscal impact?
Good question. So the traffic study that was part of that original request, that is available now.
Okay.
As for the fiscal impact and the water studies, they were apparently in draft form around mid-March, expected pretty soon after that.
Yeah.
So if this does come back, those studies will be crucial.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. Shifting gears a bit, still in Palmer Lake. Sounds like there might be some political shifts happening. Talk of recall petitions.
Yeah. This definitely adds an interesting layer to... the local government dynamics there.
So what's the situation?
The administrative report from March 13th confirmed it. Recall petitions for trustees Ball, Dreher, and Stern were approved. Just the legal form, mind you, but approved.
Okay, so approved as a form. What happens next? What's the process?
Well, the petitioners, whoever they are, they now have a 60-day window from that date.
To do what?
To collect signatures. They need at least 275 signatures from registered voters in Palmer Lake.
275. Okay. And if they get them?
If they manage that and the signatures are verified, then a recall election has to be scheduled.
And the timing for that?
The town admin said they need up to 90 days after the verification to actually plan and hold the election.
Gotcha. So that could definitely shake things up on the board later this year. Interesting. Now, another debate brewing in Palmer Lake seems to be around social media, a policy for the trustees.
Yeah, this came up at that same March 13th meeting. It was part of a bigger discussion about, you know, trustee roles and expectations.
Who brought it up?
Trustee Havanar. She asked if the board thought they needed to add something specific about social media use to their existing policies.
And what was the feeling? Sounds like maybe not everyone agreed.
Well, the town attorney stepped in and made a really important distinction.
Which was?
Between official town social media accounts, which are public forums, basically, with limited restrictions, and the personal social media pages of the trustees themselves.
Right. Big difference.
Huge. The attorney advised having some kind of policy to navigate potential issues. Trustee Havanar mentioned that, you know, all the board members had faced negativity online, which he called lies and filth.
Yeah, that happened.
She initially seemed a bit resistant to a strong policy, saying she had a right to defend herself online. But in the end, the board asked the attorney to go ahead and draft a policy for them to look at.
Okay. And did they look at it? I think they met again on March 27th.
They did. The draft policy was presented then. It basically drew that line between official town stuff and personal content from employees and officials.
Any key takeaways from the draft?
There's one line that really stood out. It said something like, employees must recognize that most uses of personal social media are still part of the public domain, regardless of privacy settings, and are easily replicated and published.
Oof, yeah. A good reminder that nothing online is truly private. How did the trustees react to this draft?
Well, Trustee Dreher spoke up pretty strongly about his First Amendment rights. Uh-huh. He objected to anything that might limit his ability to respond to negative comments online.
Okay.
Cressy Havanar agreed, even mentioning she'd been referenced on social media by the wife of another board member. And Trustee Ball also weighed in, saying board members have a right to self-defense, especially, you know, during campaigns.
So lots of opinions. What did they decide? Did they adopt the policy?
Nope. Despite all the discussion, they took no action on the updated policy at that meeting.
So still up in the air then. All right, let's talk about the police department in Palmer Lake. Sounds like there were some workshops and updates there, too.
Yeah, and what's encouraging is the approach the new police chief, Glenn Smith, is taking. He did a workshop presentation back on February 27th.
What were his main points?
He laid out his initial goals. Big focus on reviewing and updating standards, policies, procedures, and the big one, getting state accreditation.
Accreditation? Why is that important?
He called it a vital roadmap to bring the entire standard of the police department higher. So really setting a high bar.
Makes sense. What else is he focusing on?
Training. Evaluating what they need, especially in areas like crisis intervention, officer safety, de-escalation techniques, critical stuff.
Absolutely.
He also wants to boost the department's visibility within El Paso County overall. Plus, they're doing an evidence audit, you know, cleaning out old stuff properly, working on a vehicle replacement plan, and tackling recruitment.
Sounds like a lot on his plate. Did he mention staffing?
Yeah, he noted they have openings. 2 full-time police officer spots and a part-time admittance position were open at the time.
Okay. And wasn't there something about a new building? A feasibility study?
Right. After his presentation, the board actually authorized Trustee Havanar to sign off on a professional service agreement.
For what exactly?
For a study looking into the feasibility of a joint public safety building. You know, one facility for both police and fire.
Oh, interesting. Combining forces.
And they got some help funding it, too. A $12,500 matching grant from the State Department of Local Affairs for this initial study.
Nice. Good use of state funds for local planning. And speaking of funding, didn't the chief get approved for a new vehicle?
He did. At the March 13th meeting, the board okayed up to $38,000 from the general fund for a new vehicle for him.
For patrol use?
No, it's more for administrative use. Oh. Won't have all the specialized police gear. Then, on March 27th, they formalized it with Resolution 32-2025, authorizing the purchase of a 2025 Chevy Colorado for just under $35,000. Got it. Okay, let's switch gears again. Elephant Rock property, that's been talked about for a while. Any movement there?
It definitely keeps coming up. They had another workshop on March 6th, focused just on future uses for that property.
Who came out of that?
John Toole from the Parks and Trails Commission presented a concept. He called it a passive park.
Passive park,
yeah.
Like we discussed before, kind of a recap.
Exactly. It was basically revisiting that earlier presentation from February about potential zones within a park focused on nature and low-impact recreation.
Okay. Any new ideas or concerns raised this time?
Trustee Havanar brought up traffic, specifically the impact on Highway 105. She asked about the threshold, like how much traffic would trigger CDOT requiring road improvement from the town.
Good question. Highway 105 can be tricky.
Yeah. She also floated the idea of using part of the property for a community center.
Other idea. Trustee Hudson suggested hiring a professional site planner to get a cohesive vision. Trustee Caves proposed maybe selling off some portions for things like a soccer field or other buildings, but reserving land for public safety.
Like housing?
Jerka mentioned maybe using existing buildings for police and firefighter housing. Lots of ideas flying around.
But were there any cautions?
Trustee Collins reminded everyone about current regulations, traffic, drainage, stormwater, and she warned against doing things piecemeal, stressed the need for a comprehensive plan.
Makes sense. Did they revisit this at the later meeting?
They did, on March 13th. Trustee Havanar asked again about the status of the building still on the property and what the Parks and Trails Commission would focus on over the summer.
And the CDOT traffic question, any updates?
Trustee Collins reported back. She'd spoken with CDOT. Their first step would be requiring the town to fund a full traffic study.
And then?
Depending on what that study shows, CDOT would likely require the town to pay for and build improvements on Highway 105, things like turn lanes, deceleration lanes.
So the town pays, but it's still a state highway.
Exactly. The town funds the design and construction, but the road stays under state ownership. Potentially significant costs involved.
Yeah, sounds like it. So where did they land on Elephant Rock for now?
The consensus was to let the Parks and Trails Commission move forward with smaller projects like signs, benches, things that don't have a huge impact.
And the bigger picture.
Krusty Cave really emphasized the need for a formal plan development document, something that clearly lays out the zoning and what land uses are allowed for the whole property.
Who's going to create that?
Trustee Kays and Trustee Hudson actually volunteered to take the lead on drafting that plan.
Okay, that sounds like a solid next step. Now, one more from Palmer Lake, a workshop about trash haulers. Selecting just one?
That's right. This came from Trustee Stern. The idea was, you know, could having a single trash hauler save residents money and maybe mean fewer big trucks on the roads?
Makes sense, potentially. Did they hear from companies?
They did. Also on March 13th, they had presentations from three. Apex Waste Solutions, they operate as Infinite Disposal Republic Services, and Waste Connections.
Are those presentations public?
Yep. They're available on the town website if anyone wants to check them out.
What was the board's initial take?
Trustee Dreher sounded interested, but was cautious about, you know, forcing everyone to use one company.
Could they even do that?
Well, Trustee Stern pointed out people could still haul their own trash, but the town attorney clarified things.
What did the attorney say?
Legally, the town cannot require residents to use the hauler the board picks, even though the companies base their pricing on assuming pretty much everyone would participate.
Okay, so that complicates the pricing and the whole concept a bit. Definitely something to watch. All right, that covers Palmer Lake for this dive. Let's head south to Monument. Big things happening there, too, starting with the Monument 2040 Comprehensive Plan.
Yeah, this is a really major effort for Monument, looking way ahead. I remember we talked about their workshop last September?
Vaguely, yeah. Remind me of the purpose.
A comprehensive plan. It's foundational. Built on public input, it sets the community vision, goals, objectives. It guides everything: land use, development, capital improvements, grant applications, budgets. It sets expectations for investment too, public and private.
So, a big deal. And they're really focused on getting public input.
Absolutely. They're working with a consulting firm, the Lakota Group, specifically to help with public engagement.
How have they been doing that?
Before they even held the big Bear Creek Community Conversation event, Lakota did 17 smaller focus groups, getting different perspectives.
And the Bear Creek event itself, what was that like?
It was all roundtable discussions. They covered a ton of ground: housing, economic vitality, parks and open space, downtown, sustainability, safety, wellness, connectivity, you name it.
How many people showed up?
About 60 residents participated. They rotated through the different topic tables, gave feedback. Facilitators captured it all on whiteboards, used question cards to prompt discussion. Then the facilitators gave debriefs.
Sounds very thorough. Was there another event more recently?
Yes. On March 5th, another public workshop. This one focused specifically on the downtown area.
How did that work?
People gathered around a big map of downtown. Talked about transportation, land use, historic preservation, economic development, housing, park access, all the key downtown elements.
So what's the overall message from the consultants' Lakota group?
They keep emphasizing that this plan is meant to be a strategic roadmap. It guides development, reflects the community's vision, creates policy, and importantly, it's an evolving document. It can change as the town changes.
Really good to see that long-range inclusive planning. Now, shifting topics quite a bit, Monument Academy and gender ideology, what happened there?
This was a pretty significant move by the Monument Academy Board President Ryan Graham. He put forward a motion to adopt a formal resolution.
A resolution about what?
Essentially, recognizing only two sexes and rejecting what the resolution termed gender ideology.
Okay. What were the main points in the resolution?
It stated support for natural law and moral truth, student safety and innocence. It explicitly drew a distinction between sex and terms like gender expression or gender identity.
Does it reference anything beyond the school?
Yes. It specifically mentioned recent presidential executive orders. The resolution framed these orders as defending women from gender ideology extremism, restoring biological truth, and ending radical indoctrination in schools.
And it mentioned federal funding.
It did. It cited potential risks to federal funding if the Academy's policies weren't seen as aligning with this two-sex concept as defined in those executive orders.
So what does the resolution actually direct the school to do?
It tells the executive director to update policies, procedures, agreements, guidelines, everything, really, to align with this two-sex concept.
Any specific examples?
Yes. Ensuring privacy and security in restrooms and locker rooms based on biological sex, promoting fair competition in sports. Specifically, separate restrooms and locker rooms, prohibiting biological males from competing as females in sports, and even stating the Academy might decline to participate in events where opposing teams allow that.
Right. That's definitely a strong stance. Was there any other discussion related to student issues at that meeting? discipline, maybe?
Yes. Trustee Kaminsky brought something up. He mentioned alleged incidents involving serious physical harm to students and said many parents supported strong discipline.
What did he urge the academy to do?
To strictly enforce the MA handbook rules about expulsion for behavior on or off property that's detrimental to safety. He specifically said actions that qualify as adult assault under state law should be direct grounds for expulsion.
Okay. Moving on to something more collaborative and Monument, a regional water partnership.
That's right. The town council passed resolution number 15-2025. It authorizes a project participation agreement with the Pikes Peak Regional Water Authority.
Right, it's the project.
It's a study looking into the potential for indirect potable reuse, basically. Treating wastewater to drinking water standards across the region. Mostly El Paso County, but it includes Palmer Lake, too.
Indirect potable reuse. Sounds complex, but potentially important for water supply.
Exactly. The idea is the study could benefit all the participating members down the road with water management strategies.
Good regional thinking. Now, the town manager also gave a report recently. What were the highlights? Achievements for the town.
It was pretty comprehensive. Covered a lot of ground.
Like what?
Website redesign, staff development programs, big improvements in records management. They added a new position and a new system. Continued community events, which are always popular.
Any new businesses mentioned?
Yep. My House Cafe, KVRR Hospitality Group, Colorado Pinball Pub, Whataburger, a 7-Eleven. Quite a few additions.
What about town department?
Police department staff got recognized. Finance department made improvements, like successfully implementing self-collected sales tax. Public Works had facility upgrades focused on water infrastructure and energy savings. And the planning department reorganized their review process to be more efficient.
Sounds like a busy, productive time. Is that report available?
Yes. The full report is up on the town's website for anyone interested.
Great. Another infrastructure item, well water upgrades. Something about iron.
Yeah, that came up. The town council approved resolution number 18-2025. It amends an engineering contract with a firm called 4H Associates.
Why the amendment?
Turns out, after wells 11, 12, and 13 went into service, they found high levels of iron content, unexpectedly high. And that led to complaints from residents about, you know, taste and water color.
Okay, so what's the fix?
4-H Associates, who designed the original systems, will now design an iron removal system for those three wells.
Is that expensive?
Well, the engineering contract amendment is one part. The actual construction and installation of the iron removal infrastructure, that's estimated to be around $500,000.
$500,000. Did the council approve moving forward?
Yes. They unanimously approved contracting for all three systems.
Mm.
They want to get that water quality issue fixed.
Makes sense. Important for residents. And just quickly, Taste of Trilix is coming back.
Yes. Good news for foodies. That event is returning.
And the Planning Commission looked at a water tank project, Promontory Point.
You did. On March 12th. They discussed and ultimately recommended approval for the Promontory Point water tank.
Is that the one getting ARPA funds?
That's the one. $7 million ARPA grant helping fund it. It's a big one. 1.5 million gallons.
Does it require zoning changes?
Yeah. A small parcel needs rezoning from PU to final plat. And there's a major PUD amendment involved, too.
What will it look like?
Plans include a concrete containment wall, a screen wall to help with visuals. They also discuss landscaping and ADA access.
And the need for it.
The project team really stressed the need for more water storage to keep up with growing demand in that area.
Any public feedback?
Yeah, public comment noted the new tank will be about the same height as the old one, so not a huge change in visibility.
So the Planning Commission recommended approval?
Correct. Recommended approval to the town council for the final decision. They also touched on the community engagement efforts for that Monument 2040 plan we discussed earlier.
Got it. Okay, let's shift now to the Tri-Lakes Monument Fire Protection District, or Monument Fire District, as most people call it.
Right. Several things to cover there. First off, inclusion. At their February 26th meeting, the board approved a petition to include about 106 acres into their district.
Where is that land?
It's off Gambler Place, actually in Colorado Springs. The plan is for 10 single-family homes there.
So, expanding their boundaries slightly, what about impact fees? Sounds like those might be changing.
Yes, they hired BBC Research and Consulting to update their impact fees. They haven't changed since 2016, currently $771 per new unit.
Why the update now?
Well, partly because it's been a while, but also a change in state law helps. They can now collect fees in unincorporated El Paso County without needing consent from a municipality, which used to be a hurdle.
Are the fees likely to go up?
The expectation is yes, potentially significantly. The final report from BBC is done and sent to the Housing and Building Association. The district plans to meet with builders to discuss the proposed increases.
When would new fees take effect?
The goal seems to be implementation sometime in 2026, so not immediate, but coming.
Okay. What about their accreditation process? How's that going?
Making really good progress. Fire Chief Kovacs reported they're about 95% done with the whole district-wide agency accreditation process.
Any recent milestones?
The board formally approved the 2025 Community Risk Assessment, the CRA, and the Standards of Cover, or SOC. Both are key documents for accreditation.
What's next?
Peer assessors are coming in May to review their self-assessments. Then the district plans to submit the formal accreditation request in August.
Sounds like they're on track. Facility updates, any news on the station remodels?
Yes. They awarded the contract for the north side remodel of Station 4 on Glen Eagle Drive.
Who got the contract?
Flintco LLC. For just under $158,000. They're the same company that did the south side remodel there last year.
Okay. Any other projects awarded?
Also awarded to Flintco, the remodel of the Mitchell Avenue rental property the district owns. That's capped at the budgeted $500,000.
So keeping those facility investments moving, did they talk about long-term planning, fiscal sustainability?
They did. Had a workshop on March 15th specifically about that. Look at the impact of growth, long-term financial health.
Are they planning major staffing increases?
Chief Kovacs suggested a more conservative approach for now, even though some managers see a need for more staff. He cited potential swings in property tax revenue as a reason for caution.
So what are they considering for future revenue?
They discuss several possibilities, those impact fee increases we mentioned, evaluating ambulance transport rates, maybe a mill levy increase down the road, even potentially exploring a sales tax within the district. Lots of options on the table.
And the Station 3 rebuild is a big part of this, right?
Huge part. The total cost estimate is now around $20.25 million. They've already got $3 million set aside in the 2025 budget.
How will they fund the rest?
They're leaning towards an $18 million 20-year loan. But they asked staff to get proposals for shorter-term construction loans, too, just to compare before deciding.
Any offsetting income?
Yes. They expect about $499,000 from selling the existing Station 3 property to Woodmore Water and Sanitation District once the rebuild starts.
How long will construction take?
About a year is the estimate.
Big project. Now, Station 2 remodel needed more money.
Yes, there was a request for additional funds there, up to $85,000 more.
What for?
Primarily to replace a leaking flat roof that's been causing problems and needing temporary fixes. That's estimated around $71,000 to $74,000. The rest, about $10,000, is for some interior painting.
Where's the extra money coming from?
From the capital expenditure budget. They'll defer some other planned purchases for 2025 to cover this.
Makes sense to fix a leaky roof.
Yeah.
Okay, Station 1 Training Center. Any updates?
Some movement. OZ Architects delivered the cost estimate for site grading. The site design group needs to meet now.
Didn't someone want to buy part of that land?
Front Range Fire Apparatus did. But they've backed out now. Apparently the grading costs were just too high for them.
Oh, okay. So what happens now?
The district is actually helping Front Range Fire Apparatus try to find a different site somewhere else in Monument.
Interesting twist. Okay, one last thing for the fire district bonds. Pinyon Pines Metro District 3.
Yes. The board approved moving forward with issuing general obligation, limited tax convertible, capital appreciation bonds, CAB Series 2025. For PPMD 3.
How much?
Not to exceed $21 million.
Mm.
These are CABs, so interest accrues and is paid at maturity, not periodically.
Any key terms?
Expected fixed rate for about 30 years, pledged debt service cap of 40 mils, minimum 32, maximum repayment around $27 million, maximum interest rate 18%, maturing no later than December 1st, 2056.
Complex financing. And quickly, covenant enforcement for Forest Lakes and PPMD 3.
Right. Since those are commercial-only districts, new policies are pretty limited. Basically, they can have a policy about fines and notifying violators.
That's it?
That's what the district's current policy covers for them, imposing fines and the steps involved. They noted it could be updated later if residential properties ever get added to those districts.
Gotcha. All right. Let's pivot to the water and sanitation districts, starting with Woodmore Water and Sanitation, WWSD.
Okay. At their March 10th meeting, the WWSD board authorized an easement agreement with the Woodmore Improvement Association, the WIA.
What was the easement for?
For a well 12R. They needed access across WIA property.
Any concerns raised?
Yes. A resident, Tish Norman, spoke up, worried about potential noise and light pollution during the well drilling.
How did the district respond?
They assured residents they'd give notice before drilling, use temporary sound walls, use hooded lighting to minimize glare, and importantly, restore the land afterwards.
Good to hear they addressed those concerns, and they also amended their agreement with the Loop, right? The Regional Water Project.
They did. This amendment was basically procedural housekeeping.
How so?
It adjusted the number of Loop board appointments per district and tweaked the unanimous vote requirement. This became necessary after Cherokee Metro District pulled out of the Loop.
Why did Cherokee leaving cause an issue?
With only three districts left, just two board members could form a quorum. That meant even casual chats could trigger open meeting law requirements, like needing 24-hour notice. So the amendment fixed that procedural quirk.
Ah, makes sense. Streamlining things. What about their regular operations? Anything noteworthy?
The operations superintendent reported higher than usual water loss over the last 3 months.
Any idea why?
They suspect leaks. Staff are actively looking for visual evidence, and they're evaluating different leak detection technologies.
Any equipment issues?
Yeah. The motor failed in well 10, and the variable flow device failed in well 21. So repairs or replacements needed there.
And engineering updates?
The engineer reported working with Classic Homes on timelines for the Monument Junction development. Also, they hit a snag with the newest Dawson aquifer. Well, he's a changing construction method.
Always something with infrastructure. Okay, moving just south to the Monument Sanitation District, MSD. What's new there?
Not a lot, but a few things from the manager's report. They replaced two toilets at their headquarters.
Exciting stuff. Why?
Apparently, they were leaking persistently and driving up the water bill. They also plan to install a pressure-reducing valve to prevent future leaks. Small things, but they add up.
True. Anything else?
Manager Hamilton thanked a resident, Mr. Smith, for sharing some experience. The board also talked about maybe making the board's self-nomination process more transparent.
Transparency is usually good.
Board member Parker reminded them about the specific laws governing elections for districts like MSD. And Mr. Smith apparently expressed interest in potentially being appointed if a board seat opens up.
Okay. Let's move to Trivue Metropolitan District now. They had a special meeting and a regular meeting recently. Must be busy.
Very busy. The special meeting on March 3rd was specifically to approve the ballot language for May 6th.
Ballot language for what?
For the Higbee Road Improvements bonds question. They're asking voters to approve a $12.6 million debt increase.
What's the total repayment estimate?
Maximum repayment estimated at $25.25 million over 30 years, with a max interest rate of 5.27%.
How would they pay that back?
The plan is to use funds from the existing voter-approved 7 mills, road bridge fees from new home sales in the district, and some sales tax reimbursement they get from the town of Monument. Annual payment estimated around $835,000.
Okay. Any rules about promoting the ballot question?
Yes. District staff reminded everyone. No, using district employees or funds for promotion. But individual board directors can provide info and advocate using their own personal resources, though they have to report any spending.
Got it. Where can people find details on the project?
Project details are online. The district provided a link.
Good. What else happened at Trivue's meetings?
They approved an agreement related to the Teachout Creek crossing improvements. This is with Conexus Metro District No. 1 and Conexus LLC for that proposed development west of Monument.
And their board election is coming up May 6th, too.
Yes. Three seats are open, and four candidates are running. Eric Demkovich, John Gibbons, Anne-Marie Jolda, and Mike McEwen.
Are their bios available?
Yep. In the district's March-April newsletter and on their website.
Okay. Let's talk water. How's Trivue's water supply looking?
Pretty good, according to the district manager.
Yeah.
They've used up their leased water from Pueblo Reservoir, that 409-acre feet. Now they're using their first-use water rights from Fountain Mutual Irrigation Co.
What about the snowpack? Is Pueblo Reservoir expected to spill?
They anticipate it might, given the snowmelt. Critical dates mentioned were April 15th and 30th.
How much storage does Trivue have?
They had about 1,588 acre-feet in their south reservoir. It spills at 1,630. So they've been proactively moving water around to make space, just in case.
And their overall supply strategy?
The manager highlighted their continued delivery through CSU's complex exchange system and access to Rampart Reservoir Storage. He described it as essentially an infinite renewable water supply.
Infinite? That's a bold claim.
Well, he also noted that using their well water as a supplement also makes it renewable in their system. So feeling confident about their water situation.
Okay. Any operational issues besides water supply?
Yes. A measurement issue at the wastewater treatment plant, UMCRWWTF. More water seems to be leaving than coming in.
How are they fixing that?
They plan to replace the current 6-inch measuring flume with a larger 9-inch one. They think that will fix the inaccuracy.
What about water loss in the distribution system?
That's ticked up recently. 2.6 million gallons lost in January, 2.8 million in February.
Do they know why?
They've ruled out inaccuracies with the Norton delivery system and haven't found major leaks. So now they're checking meters, especially focusing on updating older commercial meters as a possible cause.
Meter accuracy is key. Anything else from TrueView? A land inclusion.
Yes. A petition for inclusion came in. About 67 acres off West Baptist Road, unincorporated county land. It's called Delacroche Ranch, LLC. Petition submitted by Classic Homes.
What's planned there?
A mix of housing sizes, some large lots, but also some affordable housing mentioned. Importantly, the district manager said it wouldn't burden their water or wastewater systems.
Did the board approve it?
They accepted the petition for consideration. But formal approval can only happen after a public hearing, which they still need to schedule.
Got it. Any other resolutions passed?
Approved one on water backflow policy, 2025-04, and another adopting the budget for Subdistrict A, 2025-05, zero balance. No mill levy for 2025.
What about that economic development incentive policy?
Ah, they looked at that one. Resolution 2025-05 in the notes, but likely a different number. But they decided to table it. Concerns about some language being potentially restrictive or discriminatory.
So back to the drawing board on that one.
Exactly. It needs revision before they look at it again.
Okay, that's TrueView. Yeah. Let's check in quickly on the El Paso County Regional Lewd Water Authority, the LLOOP.
Right. Key step at their March meeting. They awarded a contract to Burns and McDonald.
For what part of the project?
For the water treatment plant design and also for pilot testing the treatment processes. Big step.
What about acquiring land or easements? Any talk of eminent domain?
They discussed it. Specifically, a letter regarding the possible use of eminent domain directed to Western States Land Services, the firm they hired to get the pipeline easements.
But are they actually using it?
They emphasized it's a last resort. Only if good faith negotiations fail.
Okay. Financial planning for the LLOOP.
They talked about maybe hiring a financial advisor to help figure out funding strategies.
Mm.
They had a preliminary chat with Holman Capital, which is a private equity fund.
Any next steps decided?
A suggestion was made to hold a workshop soon, just to focus on funding the next stages of the project.
Makes sense. Big project. Needs solid funding.
Mm.
How about Donnell Water and Sanitation District, DWSD?
Donnell Board voted back in February for a rate increase. 5% across the board for water and sewer.
Ouch. Any other news from them?
They announced their upcoming board election was canceled.
Why? Not enough candidates.
Exactly. They also reviewed their recent sanitary survey, which went well.
Did they also amend their LLOOP agreement like Woodmore did?
Yes, same reason. Cherokee Metro withdrawing created that quorum issue, so they approved the amendment to fix the procedural quirk on the LLOOP board.
Operational updates from Donald Wells.
The redrilling of Well 7D is apparently going well. They've held two meetings with neighbors about it. Drilling expected to start around May 1st.
Any other site work?
Yeah, they replaced an undersized transformer at that well site. It was humming, apparently. Put in a properly sized one.
Good. Okay, briefly, El Paso County Planning Commission. Anything relevant to our area?
Just one item noted here. On March 6th, they unanimously approved the final plat for the Berkheimer subdivision.
Where's that?
Intersection of Black Forest Road and Vesey Road. It's splitting a roughly 13.7-acre RR5 zone property into two lots, one 8.4 acres, one 5.1 acres.
So just dividing an existing parcel, and it goes to the county commissioners next.
Correct. Recommended to the BOCC for final approval.
Okay. Let's talk about NEPCO, the Northern El Paso County Coalition of Community Associations. They had a meeting.
They did, on March 15th. Had an interesting guest speaker, the Colorado Deputy Commissioner of Insurance.
Insurance? Relevant for HOAs, I guess.
Very relevant. The meeting included NEPCO's business report, but big presentations on HOAs and homeowner insurance. NEPCO represents 49 HOAs, remember, quite a wide area.
What's NEPCO's role again?
They act as a collective voice, advocate for community engagement, smart growth. Their business report mentioned web enhancements, a mapping project with the Monument Fire District for emergencies, and wildfire preparedness efforts using Constant Connect.
And the insurance discussion, what did that cover?
A lot about recent state legislation affecting HOAs and homeowners. Bills like HB 23-1174, HB 25-1182, and others.
What kind of implications?
Things like rebuilding costs, rules about notice before cancellation, guaranteed replacement cost coverage, how insurers use risk models, the state's FAIR plan for high-risk properties, a market study, wildfire reinsurance, even grants for roof upgrades. Big topics.
Did anyone else speak?
Rob Sosek, a local insurance broker, talked about why premiums are rising. Increased labor and material costs, fewer insurers in the market, the need for risk reduction. He advised people to shop around and review their policies annually.
Good advice. Any other updates at the NEPCO meeting?
Brief updates from Chief Bradley on fire mitigation, and Sean Saul mentioned the Bucky's concerns again. Meeting info is on the NEPCO website.
Sounds like a valuable resource for HOA residents. How about the Woodmore Improvement Association, WIA? What's been discussed there?
A couple of resident concerns came up. At their February meeting, people were worried about Woodmore Water's plan to re-drill that well on Muzzleloader Way.
What were the worries?
Noise, potential sediment runoff, how the site would be revegetated afterwards, the hours they'd be drilling. The WIA forestry director said he'd look into it.
And at the March meeting?
A different group of residents came. They were following up on concerns about a neighbor, allegations of shooting squirrels, improper wood storage, harassing others.
Wow. What did they want from the WIA?
It raised questions about covenant enforcement. How does the WIA handle those kinds of neighbor disputes and alleged violations?
Always tricky issues for HOAs. Okay, let's lighten things up. Between the covers at Covered Treasures Bookstore, what did they highlight?
April is National Poetry Month, and it's also Earth Day Month. So they featured books related to both.
Any local authors?
Yes. The first four poetry books mentioned were by Colorado poets, and the first three actually did a signing event at the store on April 5th.
Nice. What kinds of books were featured?
A real mix. Mountain, Go on a Grand Tour by Jason Biddle, exploring mountains worldwide. Poetry collections like The Search for Me by M.E. Johnson and Daughter of Breath by Grace E. Kelly, dealing with big themes like loss, healing, identity.
What else?
The Visible Speaking by Catherine Winograd, about visual images and photography. Shoreline of the Heart by Joseph Murphy, Zen Buddhist-inspired poems. For kids, Hello Earth, Poems to Our Planet by Joyce Sidman. And for Earth Day, The 12 Trees by Daniel Lewis, about the importance of trees using science and indigenous knowledge.
Sounds like a great selection. Palmer Lake Historical Society, anything interesting coming up?
Their April meeting sounds fascinating. Dave Harmon is portraying General William J. Palmer.
General Palmer himself. What will the presentation cover?
His life, background in engineering, railroads, his studies in Europe, work for coal companies, the Pennsylvania Railroad, even his friendship with Thomas Scott, who became Assistant Secretary of War. Should be really interesting.
Definitely a key figure in our local history. How about gardening tips from the lazy gardener?
Some good practical advice. First, deer-resistant plants. Listed marigolds and a bunch of herbs. Chives, lemon balm, parsley, thyme, dill, sage, mint, yarrow. Also allium, garlic, echinacea, chamomile.
Good list to have around here. What else?
A strong recommendation for the free mulch from the Black Forest Slash and Mulch program. The author had great success using it controlled weeds, held moisture, did need extra water on a new bed.
When is that program running?
It starts up again in May. The advice was to plant seeds under the mulch in April or May, and a reminder that plants need warmth and water, especially after late snows.
Good timing with Earth Day coming up.
Yep. And a plug for volunteers needed at the Tri-Lakes Cares Food Garden.
Always opportunities to help out. On the trail hiking news.
The Monument Hiking Group had a planning session late March, led by Lisa Lober. Talked about local hikes and longer ones, even 14ers.
Did they schedule anything?
Yes, a local hike on Mount Hermon for April 8th. The notes gave all the details, where to meet, trailhead route, distance, elevation gain, time estimate, gear recommendations.
Any other plans?
Discussed maybe doing training sessions on safety devices like InReach or Zoleo. Also, a word of caution about going off trail. Advised going with someone experienced, maybe Sasquatch if you know him.
Huh. Good advice. Any talk of longer trips?
Possibility of overnight hikes mentioned. Best bet is to check their Facebook page for updates.
Okay. Art matters. What was the theme this time?
It explored the evolution of art. How it shifted from reflecting patrons' tastes to reflecting the artist's personal vision.
How did that shift happen?
Talked about the decline of aristocratic patronage, the rise of salons, art dealers, mentioned the impressionists focusing on modern life, then modernism and abstract expressionism bringing more artist independence.
Who buys art now, according to the article?
The primary buyers shifted from, you know, churches and kings to galleries, collectors, museums.
And what is contemporary art about?
Often addresses social, political, cultural issues. Ideas can sometimes be more important than technical skill. It's more about meaning than just imitating reality.
So it makes you think.
Exactly. It questions and critiques reality, reflects beauty, but also chaos, environmental issues, our digital world, all of it.
Interesting perspective. Okay, quick hits now. Snapshots our community. What happened?
Lewis Palmer D38 chess tournament back on March 8th. Bear Creek Elementary, 108 students. Big turnout.
Nice. What else?
Lake and Lantern Cafe opened in Palmer Lake, end of February. Former speed trap location. It's an alcohol-free space. Hosts recovery meetings.
They have resource.
Groundbreaking for permanent restrooms at Monument Lake. Should be done by June, partly grant-funded.
Only needed those.
Pace of Life store and Monument expanded.
Yeah.
Ribbon cutting March 1st. They do homemade, gluten-free, keto meals.
Good for them. Any celebrations?
WWII vet Jim Clemens celebrated his 100th birthday.
Yeah.
March 22nd, Jackson Creek Senior Living, Navy vet. His advice for longevity, just relax.
Love it. 100 years, any donations.
Trilex Women's Club donated over 500 pounds of diapers and wipes to Trilex Cares. Huge help.
Fantastic community support. Okay, our community notices. Important reminders and info.
Black Forest / Mulch program details. Runs May, September. Location fees, mulch pickup info.
Got it.
A reminder not to remove trail blazes in Fox Run Park. They're important for the ecosystem and navigation.
Please don't touch the trail markers.
Info on the Parents Helping Parents support group run by NAMI via Zoom. Details for the Larkspur Church Food Bank and Care Center. Ways to support Trilex Cares and their current needs list. How to sign up for MVEA outage notifications.
All useful stuff. Volunteer opportunities.
Yes. Friends of Fox Run Park. Trilex Cares Garden. Plus links for other El Paso County volunteer spots.
Anything else?
Palmer Lake parking restrictions during snow. And guidance on reporting suspicious activity, what to look for, what info to give police.
Good safety reminders. Finally, our community calendar. What's coming up?
Lewis Palmer D38 Art Show. Dates and times were listed.
Always a good one.
Bethesda Gardens is having a pancake breakfast April 5th, benefiting Trilex Cares.
Pancakes for a cause.
Puzzle swap and a speed jigsaw puzzle competition on April 21st. Sounds intense.
For the competitive puzzlers.
That poetry signing at Covered Treasures on April 5th. Easter egg hunt at Trinity Lutheran Church, April 20th. Monument Hill Foundation grant application period opens April 15th, runs through May 31st.
Good for local nonprofits.
100-plus Women Who Care meeting April 16th. And looking ahead, the Big Taste of Trilex Cares event is May 14th.
Lots going on. So wrapping up, it's clear there's just a ton happening across the entire Trilex region.
Absolutely. From Palmer Lake down through Monument and Woodmore, covering government, schools, fire districts, water, community groups. It's a busy area.
It really gives you a sense of the activity, the decisions being made that shape our communities daily.
From potential major developments like Buc-ee's or not, to crucial infrastructure like water tanks and road improvements, and even debates about social media policies or school curriculum, it all weaves together.
So considering all these different threads we've touched on, new businesses, infrastructure needs, policy debates, community events, volunteer efforts, what really stands out to you? Maybe the biggest challenge or the biggest opportunity facing the Trilex region right now? And how do all these things we discussed play into that?
That's the big question, isn't it? Managing growth seems central. Balancing development with infrastructure capacity, preserving community character, ensuring resources like water are sustainable, all while dealing with differing opinions on how best to do it. These meetings and decisions are where that balancing act happens.
It really highlights how interconnected everything is. Local government choices, community initiatives, they all impact our daily lives here.
Definitely. It's why staying informed through sources like 2504 and hopefully through deep dives like this is so important.
Well, thank you for taking this deep dive with us today. We hope it gave you a good comprehensive overview of recent happenings.
Yeah, and if anything specific caught your ear, we encourage you to dig deeper. Look up those meeting minutes. Visit the organization websites we mentioned. The info is out there.
We'll be back soon with another deep dive, exploring the next round of sources and insights. Until then.